You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution to our P.O. Box, P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for December 7th, 2012. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just behind Elizabeth Warren's consumer protection railgun, it's The Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal.
We've got Elizabeth Warren in the Congress, and they're losing Jim DeMint. How
Jim
sad.
DeMint, oh. Yes.
He's cashing out.
Yeah, he totally is. In case you didn't hear, that's the breaking news today. Jim DeMint is resigning to take a welfare job at the Heritage Foundation. You know, I hate it when people game the system. You know, when they walk away from legitimate employment, which being Senator Jim DeMint really isn't, and instead choose to live off the dole of people who pay them to be lazy.
Well, I wonder if he's going to write a new health care plan for America like the Heritage Foundation did with Obamacare.
Yeah, that's the punchline. Jim DeMint's going to work for the people who invented Obamacare.
Invented Obamacare as an alternative to Hillary Care.
And if you don't know who Jim DeMint is.
Oh, I think everyone knows who Jim DeMint is. But yeah. We have some background for you anyway, because we want to vent.
Yeah, just a little bit. Well, and it's important to remember Jim DeMint was not impeached. He wasn't hounded out. He didn't lose an election. He's walking away from his job. And he is absolutely Steve Bannon of Washington Monthly classified him as one part Cheney, one part Limbaugh, and two parts Jesse Helms, which is just about right.
Yep. And today, Bowman Tribune, which is one of my favorite blogs, called him an irredeemable bastard.
Yeah.
I think it's just, you know, shorthand right there.
And he is. He is absolutely awful. And he has been made a career saying and doing awful things.
Well, and he's been the number one point man for blocking everything.
Yeah.
He just puts up his little finger and stops the filibuster. Maybe he just doesn't want to be senator without the filibuster anymore.
I know. That would be,
it's no
that
fun.
Would be so sad. Yeah, it really is.
And so the brilliant and erudite Nikki Haley, governor of South Carolina, gets to pick who replaces him for the next 2 years. And then this really changes things for Lindsey Graham, because in 2014, there will now be two senators elected from South Carolina.
Ooh.
Graham for 6 years, and then this open seat for 2 years to replace Jim DeMint.
Ooh, yeah.
So perhaps the Tea Party will decide they want to go. Well, you know, there's a lot of people in the Tea Party that just hate Lindsey Graham, though. So
yeah. Well, I've heard that Alan Keyes is willing to relocate. So
apparently that's the deal. It's, you know, you want to. I'm surprised Nikki Haley doesn't just appoint herself, because you need an African American or a woman.
Yeah. Like Napoleon, she's going to coronate herself and declare herself.
Maybe. Or like Dick Cheney.
Yeah. Because, you know, we're now talking about two different countries.
Yeah.
The People's Republic of South Carolina is a very different species of nation than the rest of sort of normal, not crazy America. And in normal, not crazy America, we have our problems. But down there, they have Jim DeMint, who has been famous for tacking anti-woman, anti-abortion, anti-choice bills onto everything he can.
Oh, yeah, onto agriculture bills. Absolutely.
Immigration bills, anything. Just stick it in there. And I don't mean just like abortion is bad. There was this one he tacked on where it would ban discussing abortion over the internet and through video conferencing. It is Handmaid's Tale. I mean, these are the Handmaid's Tale high priests. These really are the theocrats. And again, he's walking away from this job to a very well-paying position at a wingnut think tank.
The estimate is his salary goes up 8 times.
Yeah. So he's cashing out. He's doing what? He's doing a Dick Army. He's number two
on our list.
He's played the chumps for all they're worth. He's played the chumps as far as they can go, and he's cashing out. And the no-necks and mouth-breathers and hillbillies of Sisterfuck, Arkansas will, you know, scratch their heads and figure out, and they'll elect someone just like him. And he's...
It's Sisterfuck, South Carolina.
Sorry. You're right. It's a sister city, Sisterfuck, sister
enough,
city.
Enough beating up on Arkansas for today.
Well, and Mint's most famous statement, well, he talked about America sliding towards, you know, fascist pre-Germany World War II with the election. And
well, I think you said earlier today to me that he's just really good at reading off Republican bumper stickers.
Oh, he is. He is.
And as you say, the mouth breathers in the Republican Party just eat it up.
Sop it up with a biscuit. And so he's Barack Obama aligns himself with dictators and but most famously, he said that healthcare would be Barack Obama's Waterloo. It will break him.
Yeah. Yeah.
So congratulations, Jim DeMint. I guess
what they didn't realize is that he wasn't going to be Napoleon.
No, he was going to be Wellington.
Wellington.
Yeah. So sorry, dude. Yeah, you got that right. You just looked through the wrong end of the telescope. But that crazy motherfucker is leaving office of his own accord on his own two legs to go to a better paying job for the same crazy crap.
Well, and as one of my colleagues over at Crooks and Liars pointed out, as chairman of the Heritage Foundation, he can be on all the Sunday shows for the rest of his life, same as it ever was. So
until someone threatens Dick Gregory, you know, puts a gun to David Gregory's portfolio.
Yeah.
And threatens to execute all of his
assets. Or Anonymous goes and digs into what stocks these guys actually owns and exposes them for owning defense contractor stocks. Yeah, that's good. That's what it's going to be.
My apologies to all Dick Gregory fans out there, who's a very, very different person. In fact, you couldn't really find a more direct opposite person.
David Gregory, Dick Gregory. Not related.
not even on the same spectrum. Well, they're on the same spectrum if you consider the opposite endpoints to be on the same spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of cashing
out. To talk about money today and just how this is ancient Rome.
It is.
And particularly in line with this whole fiscal cliff thing, fiscal curb, whatever you want to call it. Everyone, the argument is not about spending. It's not about the deficit. It's about the pot of money that the federal government gives away and who's going to get it.
Yeah. And
that's what it's about.
And every so often we look at each other and just feel like Martin Luther visiting.
Yeah. You know,
going, holy crap. I mean, holy crap. Everything here is for sale and everyone is corrupt. And it isn't true.
Yeah.
Bernie Sanders isn't corrupt. I like Dick Durbin. I have a soft spot in my heart for Dick Durbin, so I think Dick Durbin's an okay guy. Everyone is not completely and equally corrupt. There is one party that's crazy and corrupt and evil. But holy mother of God,
they've got big money coming to them, and I'm not saying that Democrats don't. But we just have been looking, because we decided we're going to do a money issue and just look at all this money, given that when we found out Dick Army was, you know, fighting his way out of FreedomWorks and, I'm leaving in a huff, but I'm not saying anything. And then the next day we find out he has an $8 million golden parachute that's being administered by the private Cancer Centers of America guy who doesn't take public insurance at all, no Medicare. You know, his cancer institutes take Cadillac plan insurance. Yeah.
Private market insurance.
And that's what FreedomWorks was all about, at stopping Obamacare so that the money, it's about money, goes to private insurance companies.
Well, and apparently FreedomWorks, it's like somebody tossed a, you know, grenade under the door, because they completely lost it. They suspended some of their people.
Election that they weren't supposed to lose. Yeah.
Well, but some of their upper people were suspended. Mm-hmm. Others are heading towards the door because, you know, the cash cow, the Tea Party cash cow, the chumps are milked dry. There's nothing left to steal from them.
You're so class up, but there's going to be a whole lot more independence after this election.
I bet there will be, Blue Gal. and I got to say, my contribution to the Dick Army oeuvre was something called the Bush Belly Sneeches.
Yes.
Off, and the Bush off machine. It's a riff, and I'll post the link. I'm actually kind of proud of that.
You should be proud of that. It was a very good post, and it was about people who had Bush on their belly, and then all of a sudden they went through a machine, and Dick Army put them through this machine, and they had a "Don't tread on me" on their belly after that. So.
And they paid for it, and Dick Army just stood up there, took their cash, put them through this magical machine that made the Bush, you know, scar, the stain, the mark of the beast go away. And that's what the Tea Party was. It was just a shitload of money being fronted by lots of billionaires and Fox News to erase George Bush from history and pretend, get let a lot of Republicans from Sisterfuck, South Carolina, pretend that they never voted for him and they have no idea who George Bush was. And they've always hated deficits. And who is this black man anyway? And Dick Armey was in charge of that. Remember, House Majority Leader Dick Armey. This guy is nowhere near a grassroots anything. He's been a corrupt, half-drunk, mouthy, bigoted Republican insider since Christ was, you know, in short pants.
And he's the one who told Joan Walsh, "I'm glad you're not my wife."
Yeah.
You know, yapping all the time.
Yeah. "You're not my husband because I'd poison you."
Yeah. Well, and, you know, Chris Matthews didn't say a thing. Say a thing.
Nope. Because you don't.
But didn't have him on again either. So, and Dick Armey also, I want to point out something else about Dick Armey. Dick Armey sued to be able to keep his Cadillac healthcare plan and continue to get his Social Security money. The deal was, and the person that went after him for this, because it was right at the time of Freedom Works speeches and the Tea Party rallies, and Glenn Beck, Dick Armey sued the federal government and lost. What happens with Social Security and Medicare is if you are on Social Security, you get Medicare. That's what happens. You have to take both. And you have to be eligible for both. And Dick Armey sued to get out of Medicare, if you can imagine that, because he wanted his Cadillac healthcare plan from being a congressman to pay for his healthcare. And the reason he couldn't do that is his Cadillac insurance told him, "No, you have Medicare. You're 66, so you have Medicare, and Medicare will pay for your hospitalization, and we will not pay benefits to you." And so he couldn't get all the Cadillac health care that he wanted from his government job.
Uh-huh.
Get it? Government job. He couldn't get the good government health care. He had to take what everybody else gets at 65, 66.
So what you're saying is Dick Armey, in pursuit of his government benefits, got himself a trial lawyer and went looking for an activist judge.
Exactly.
Can I find me an activist
judge? That's what he did while heading up Freedom Works to try to kill Obamacare.
Because he's a Republican. Fucking hypocrite.
And it's it's all about the money. And if it comes to me, and he did not want to lose. He could have given up Medicare and kept his insurance, but he'd have to give up his Social Security.
Yeah.
And I want that check.
Yeah. That's all money coming way.
I paid into that my whole life. I invested in that my whole life. That's my money.
Uh-huh.
So don't let Republicans pretend that they care about deficits and spending and that we really need to reform Medicare.
No.
Somebody was pointing out today that, you know, I think it was Plumline was saying, you know, George will not be happy until someone loses their Medicare coverage. Yeah.
Just one.
Just anybody. Somebody has to lose their Medicare coverage.
And for those of our Republican and conservative listeners who want to draw a line around 2006 to 2007 and say before that, you know, conservatism all went wrong during Bush's second term. Remember, Dick Armey, Tom DeLay, Newt Gingrich are all swimming in the same fucking sewer in the 90s. Okay, so this has been going
on. Still on TV, and they're still doing exactly the same thing. Absolutely,
they're still on TV. Their friends are still running the show,
and now they're claiming that they care about spending and that we need to serious reforms to Medicare, which is bullshit.
Uh-huh.
And let's be clear: the reason that increasing the Medicare age is such a horrible idea is that the vast majority of the people that you would kick off of Medicare under Obamacare will be eligible for Medicaid.
Yeah.
So the belief on the right is that it's easier to cut Medicaid because that's perceived as a welfare program for poor people.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to take away the New Deal. We know that. And these are
the inside players. These are the people elected to public office by people who are too stupid or too bigoted to know better. The outside players, people like Roger Ailes, who, remember, once was an inside player. He was Richard Nixon's communications director, as I recall. And under the Nixon administration, Ailes proposed something called GOP TV.
Yeah.
Which would be just a television station that played nothing but Republican propaganda. And Nixon, and they said, that's crazy. Well, you know what? 20 years later, he just founded Fox News.
Yeah.
Went to Rupert Murdoch And it turned out Roger Ailes, on the night of the election, the reason that Megyn Kelly, his favorite blonde sock puppet, was saying the shit she was saying and challenging Karl Rove.
Walking over to the people who had called the election, she was going over to the statisticians at Fox to ask them, really, really? Do you really believe that Romney's lost Ohio? Yeah, the votes aren't there. He's not going to win Ohio.
And the reason she
took that little walk in her high heels down to the heart of darkness.
Man cave, yeah.
It was because Roger Ailes was in her earpiece telling her to do that.
Yes, and he was pulling her strings on the air because she is nothing but a little blonde sock puppet, as most Fox on-air employees are. All they do is sit on the air in their very expensive suits and lovely haircuts and flash their tits every now and then if they're ladies and smile at the camera and do what Roger tells them to do, because that's what they get paid to do. And that background dealing, that the machinery of how the Fox News network lies to its viewers came perilously close to breaking out when it was revealed Roger Ailes was telling her what to say and where to go and et cetera on election night, because he was orchestrating the propaganda campaign on that night from his desk. And on the other end of that pipeline, Rupert Murdoch, this is sort of our money issue. Rupert Murdoch's iPad toy, the thing that he tried to cram one more business insider.
Yeah, he was looking at direct to iPad news.
Yeah. He blew God knows how many hundreds of millions of dollars on an internet toy and hired hundreds of people that didn't work. And yeah, okay, it didn't work. We'll close it down, go on to the next thing. But the point being, Rupert Murdoch has hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars in his sofa cushion to spare, to blow on shit like this. You know what we don't have on the left? Anything like that. Everyone I know on the left is operating on a shoestring, except for people very near the top of the food chain. But most of liberal muckraking media, most of the people who are trying to push things along, don't have hundreds of millions of dollars to play with on cool toys that might increase their market share. But the right does. And they spend their money like it's going out of style. They really do have a massive advantage when it comes to a willingness to spend money on FreedomWorks, spend money on the Heritage Foundation, spend money on Fox, spend money keeping people like Rush Limbaugh in the air. They will spend and spend and spend as much as it takes and fail all along the way and keep spending until they get what they want, because that's what they do. We have good hearts and strong legs and strong backs, but by God, do they have a money advantage.
Well, and there's a conspiracy in the media to keep that money trail going on both sides.
Yep.
I hate to use the word both sides, but I have to use it in this instance. I've been, you know, just gagging on the 2016 horse race that's already starting, you know, and Joe Klein being all up for Hillary now. And, oh, you know, Hillary, she's raising money. And as if we haven't learned in 2012 that you can't buy the presidency.
Right.
You know, that's the whole lesson of 2012.
Well,
you can't.
You can. Yeah, I think they did it wrong. I think there will come a day when you'll be able to do that.
Yeah, well, maybe.
But this wasn't that day.
This wasn't that day. And it's not just about how much money you can
raise. Exactly. That's true. You actually have to have some messaging behind it. But listen, you know, the Obama campaign raised hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars as well. And if they hadn't, they would have lost.
Would have lost. But also, where did that money go? It went to the networks. It went to TV advertising.
Yep.
And consultants. Yep. And these are the same people who then come on the air and say, you know, this is really about the fundraising and how much money can you raise. And if you can't raise the money, then you're not a viable candidate. And then the money goes into their pockets. So,
which is the circle of life again. It's
the circle of life.
They're in the business of selling essentially electoral indulgences.
Yeah. Like, so speaking of money, you have a bet you want to make. You want to make a $10,000 bet?
Oh, Dick Morse and Karl Rove are apparently being put in the penalty box. And my bet is it'll be exactly 1 month, give or take a day, because that is the industry standard. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed that because when Mark Halperin called Barack Obama a dick on the Morning Joe show, he was banished from the air for exactly 30 days. When Newt Gingrich goes out and says something incredibly stupid bigoted and racist. He is banned. He is shut off from his oxygen supply, which is basically David Gregory for 30 days.
When he says
days.
Things like Kenyan colonial mindset about the president. Yeah. Then he gets 30 days off. Yeah.
If he hops on the Ground Zero Mosque, you know, bullshit. When he starts comparing Muslims to Nazis. Apparently a memo goes out. I'm guessing it's a friendly memo saying, well, I'm sorry, Newt, but we can't have you on for 30 days because of the crazy ass bullshit you just ran on the public. So we'll have to give you 30 days off from that. And then Newt Gingrich goes off and sells, I don't know, Franklin Mint Collections or whatever scam that he's running at the time. Or goes to Shelley Adelson and says, Shelley, baby, can you float me $20 million, $30 million? I'll make it up to you. And Sheldon Adelson writes him a check. So that's how Newt Gingrich lives. But he doesn't get on the air for 30 days. And that really is the important point. Because if you watch it, I know I emphasize this a lot, but it is incredibly clear to me that even if you're wrong, if you get access to the public at the New York Times, Meet the Press, NPR level, you get to influence the debate.
Yeah.
You get to force us to talk about deficits instead of about poor people.
Right.
You get us to talk about fracking instead of renewable energy. You get us to talk about money instead of votes and electoral accountability. And even if that conversation ultimately ends up with people going, this is all bullshit, you can just keep forcing that conversation back onto your ground because you have access to 20 million people and we don't. So the people who get on the air don't do it because it's fun or interesting or because they like their company. They get it because it's hard cash bottom line profits for them, because it promotes their book, because it promotes their think tank, because it increases their publicity profile so they can charge another 20 or 30 grand every time they do public speaking. There's a real benefit to being a person on the air talking politics in America, a direct fiscal benefit and a direct electoral one. So when you take that away, that's a real penalty, but it's a slap on the wrist. Because
I would bet, I'm not sure about Karl Rove, because Karl Rove is at a level where he does definitely remind everyone of the loss of 2012. But Dick Morris will definitely be back on Fox before Inauguration Day, I would bet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's part of their, he's part of their cuddly little family. And he might have to show up on, on the morning show.
Yeah.
Cook an omelet.
Cook an omelet on Fox and Friends. Yeah.
But he'll be back, because they always come back, because they're all part of the club.
Couple last money situations here. Yeah. I wanted to talk about all of these white men getting to be committee chairman.
Yeah.
And don't forget that's about money.
Yeah.
Being committee chairman means you get, in the case of, for instance, Buck McKeon, I wrote his name down because he's chairman of the House Armed Services Committee. Uh-huh. And he gets three times the level of donations from defense contractors that any other member of the House of Representatives gets because of his chairmanship. As if you have, as I said on Twitter, as if you have a lot of LGBT African-American females to put on your committee over there in the GOP, There isn't a binder full of those.
Again, Alan Keyes will relocate. That's Elena Keyes, you bastard.
I was just thinking about John Boehner's binder of black lesbians.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's not even a pamphlet.
They gave me a binder full of black lesbian Republicans who want to be the House chairman.
Actually,
John Boehner is not going to give someone without seniority who is not a white male patriarch the money and access to money and power that chairmanship represents. So.
And you can see it at every wall in the GOP is now a load-bearing wall, and every one of them is cracking because it is so much a white male patriarchy, hierarchy, money-driven, oligarch, theocracy.
Yep.
And they're so desperate to put paint on the walls, black and brown and Asian and gay-friendly paint on the walls to cover these huge cracks, and they can't do it fast enough. And this is like the monkey in the with his hand in the jar holding the banana.
Yeah.
You want to get loose of the
banana. Let's go to the banana. He can get his hand out. Yes.
And you can't. They can't let go. They cannot let go of their base. They can't do it. Yeah. And they have to do it if they want any shot at because it's not that their base is neutral. Their entire thing is everyone else are inferior and mud people and should shut the fuck up and let white men, white conservative Christian men run the world. That's their theology. That's their theocracy. That's their philosophy. That's their politics. And you cannot have that in your head while at the same time saying, but yes, we're very gender equal. And yes, we enjoy people of other races and genders joining our little party. You can't do both. And they're going insane. They're going mad trying to figure out how to have the banana and get their damn hand out of the jar. And they can't do it.
Well, and the woman they put in charge of basically the housekeeping committee of the house, it's in charge of the cafeteria.
The hospital.
There's no lobbying money there. That's an internal committee.
And it goes down to the staff level too. I mean, if you are staff to a chairperson and you bolt and you go someplace else, your lobbying fees are multiple times higher than if you were just staffing a congressman. And it's straight up money. It really is. And how do you trade up and how do you swap money for power and power for money? And how do you keep getting a bigger and bigger mansion in a swanky suburb? That's it. That is what and I'm sure there's some at some point, I'm sure, way down deep in his black little heart, Tom DeLay was motivated to run for Congress because he just fucking hated the government. I'm not saying he wasn't crazy. I'm not saying he wasn't bug fuck. I'm sure he was. I'm sure he was a character out of a Stephen King novel. But there was something other than a desire to just stuff as much money into his pockets as he could possibly lay his hands on. And yet, because he is essentially a corrupt and awful person, once he got to D.C. and the candy store was open, he just shoveled as much into his mouth as he possibly could until he got caught and thrown out. And that ethos is now – that is the governing philosophy. That is really it. And – it scares me how casually it's forgotten and accepted by our guys too. But it's such a – on the right, it's such a direct connection, a clear, absolute clear public direct connection between the crackpot billionaires who don't want their taxes touched and their elected representatives. And the fact that the people they represent are screaming one thing and the people who have their balls in a cage are saying something entirely different. And watching them twist their nads, forcing them to say shit that is going to get them killed at the polls shows you where their heart is, because they go with the money. And whoever has the money, whoever has the gold makes the rules. Boy, that was trite. I should do that again, but I can't think of anything less.
That's where Grover Norquist, in spite of being on the outs with the American public, still has the ability to make a phone call and say, look, we're going to just primary you. So get in line. And it's got – maybe it just got to the point with Jim DeMint that he just decided, I'm not going to be able to filibuster, as I said before. I'm out of here. I can take a golden parachute and go work someplace else. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand why more of them aren't doing that. But they apparently are addicted to power and love the job and love – being in the middle of that heady atmosphere. So,
and this is the trap they made for themselves.
Yeah. Well, and they made it with the UN treaty vote. I want to get into that because that's the most embarrassing. As John Stewart said, please tell me we've hit rock bottom.
Yeah.
But I don't think we have. But
this
UN treaty vote with the Tea Party saying, homeschooling, we'll have to put up ramps for homeschooling if we sign this treaty, when this treaty was to help other countries adopt our wheelchair access laws, basically.
And these were the people who, in the 90s, when Bill Clinton was president, were hiding under their double wides. I'm sorry to insult double wides. Terrified of black helicopters and blue helmets.
Yeah, and still
that never
are.
Came. Yep. And still are. And again, every society has its 10%, 5%, 20% of deeply mentally ill, paranoid people. We're the only society I know of that has welded them into a political party and given them real power and occasionally given them access to nuclear weapons. And that's what's driving this. And watching the grizzled old veterans, the Bob Doles of the Republican Party, show up in a wheelchair to beg his colleagues to just sign a toothless resolution that would instruct the rest of the world to do what we're already doing, what we're doing. You remember back in the day when we used to lead by example?
Well, let's not forget that that bill was signed by Poppy Bush.
Yeah, yeah. Watching enough Republican senators to kill it, stand up and spout the most crackpot, WorldNet Daily, paranoid, lunatic bullshit, which they may or may not believe, but they know that their voters believe it. Mm-hmm. And these people are a fucking scourge on this country. This is the cancer that's killing this country. And it was just horrifying to watch it, and yet not in the least bit surprising, because this is who they have always been striving to be. The more pure conservatism gets, the more they look like this. And at some point, I don't know when it's going to be, they either have to hit 102 and start dying off in large numbers, because they're all old white guys, or we're going to have a shooting war in this country, or they're going to secede. And I think secession, yeah. As I said the other day, is just emigration for lazy people. yeah. It's I don't want to get out of my lounger, and they might not be able to find my Social Security check and forward it to me if I go to another country. So I'll just start my own country here,
where I still get my Social Security check. Yeah. And I'm going to secede, but I still get my Social Security check. Yeah.
I don't need to get my ass out of my chair.
I'll sue to get my Social Security check. I'll just sue in U.S. court.
I'm going to pee in a big circle, and that'll be my country. I'll mark my territory and just send my Social Security check to the Confederate States of Freedom and Liberty in America. And, you know, I get that liberals said, you know, we're leaving for Canada, and some people did, and some people left for Japan and England and Australia and never came back. And that I get that. But this is for future historians or future anybody who's listening to this 50 years from now. Go look up what liberals were mad about. Yeah. Liberals were mad about
getting
lied
into
a war.
Yes.
Were we lied? Yes, we were. Did George Bush piss away a surplus and turn it into a deficit? Yes, he did. Did he institute torture? Yes, he did. So liberals were really, really pissed, and we took to the streets and we became bloggers, and we really got radicalized over things that were actually happening in the real world. The things that Republicans are mad about are entirely a product of their fevered imagination, entirely the boogeymen that Rupert Murdoch and Rush Limbaugh invent to scare them to death and keep them terrified. Yeah. And anytime a little bit of light peeks into that world, they freak out like the devil being hit with a super soaker full of holy water and run further into the darkness. And that core of crazy, bigoted morons is who the Republican Party and the conservative movement has chosen to wrap its arms around and nurture and grow and cultivate. And now the monster has kicked the doors off the lab and is running amok. And the entire political system, Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative, independent, are all reacting to that reality. Liberals are saying, we told you so. Conservatives are saying, what? We're pure. We're righteous. God loves us. Independents are saying, I had no idea. I'm shocked to discover there was gambling going on in this establishment. But everyone's reacting to the fact that one of our two major political parties is crazy. And nobody dares to say that above a certain level in the media, because money doesn't want
because
that to
money.
Happen. Money doesn't want that to happen.
And Danny DeVito said,
yep.
They call it money. You know why they call it money? Because it's money.
Yeah, everybody needs money. You know why? No one, I'll look up the exact quote, but that's why they call it money. You know, money drives everything at this point. Money really, it drives our media. It drives our politics. It drives what people will and won't talk about, what people will and will not risk. And that's true in, you know, that I have found that to be true in places where I've worked. I mean, people are hostage to their paychecks all over the place.
Yeah, sure.
Our entire country is now yoked to this terrible need to obey money.
Well, and I want to give two more examples of this that are making me sick. One is Mitch McConnell.
Yeah.
Because Mitch McConnell, there was an article at Daily Coast this week of how Mitch McConnell became very rich. And he went in 2005. They estimate the maximum estimate for his net worth was $4.2 million.
Let me
ranking
guess.
Him the 38th richest senator.
Let me guess. It was savings and wise investment. No?
After 4 years when the stock market has flatlined, McConnell now has a net worth of somewhere between $7.1 and $32.7 million.
Wow.
He's now the 12th wealthiest senator.
He's a job creator.
Pretty good for a guy who has evidently never had a private sector job in his life.
No, he hasn't. Well,
and no, he made it the old-fashioned way. He married it.
Yeah.
I should write a whole book about Washington wives, because there is just what your wife does in D.C. and the job she gets. And there is this money conspiracy out there where your wife is an investment banker.
Well,
and
explain.
You're either a media personality or a senator. And this goes on. But in the case of McConnell, his wife, Elaine Chao, was labor secretary under Bush.
How well I remember.
And her dad made a fortune importing Chinese goods to the United States. So let's get really tough on China, shall we? Mitt somebody.
Really. So familiar. So it's on the rather than the tip of my tongue.
He was talking. There was this guy last summer who was talking about Barack Obama not getting tough enough on China.
Yeah.
We needed to get more tough on China. I can't remember his name. Anyway, we're never going to get tough on China because the Senate minority leader has, you know, $12 million worth of wealth, eight times the wealth he had 5 years ago from Chinese imports.
Yeah.
Via his labor secretary wife.
Yeah. And as I recall, our nickname for Elaine Chao at the time was the secretary in charge of cutting everything for everybody who was unemployed.
Yeah.
You know, the Labor Department under Bush was a miserable fuck house. It was just awful. And it was run with that ideological bent in mind. It was, hey, let's fucking block grant everything.
Yeah.
Here's a thought. Let's just take all the money we currently send to the states to help people who are unemployed, people who have been kicked out of their work because their jobs move overseas, people who have never had a job, people who need training, all those hosts of problems that you can actually fix with education, training, and some job development. Let's just block grant that shit and give it to the governors. And if they want to spend it on whatever they want, that's fine. But it's not our responsibility to look after those people. And it one department after another under Bush is run that way. But the woman who was in charge of running the Department of Labor as if it were the Department of Anti-Labor was Elaine Chao.
Yep.
And her husband is now the House Minority or the Senate Minority Leader.
Yep.
And he's a very, very rich man thanks to her daddy. Very much like Tom Friedman is rich thanks to his wife's daddy.
And now he's the one who laughs at Barack Obama's proposal. And this is the last thing that I want to get into before you start talking about the outrage over Christmas trees.
Well, I do want to mention, and when you think about how incredibly wealthy these people are and how incredibly their wealth is almost entirely unearned or earned from sources that they would chastise other people for getting.
Yeah.
And then ask, gee, why are they attacking Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid?
Yeah.
Oh, those are programs for people who aren't like me.
Yep.
Those are for poor, miserable wretches.
Well, and there are ways that my friends can get wealthy off of that money. And that's the point that I wanted to make, that when Barack Obama makes a proposal to make the wealthy pay a little more, as he says, and move and basically do what's going to happen anyway January 1st, that's a big part of it. That no one is saying, which is on January 1st, everybody's going to be paying a little more.
Yes.
So, you know, you can negotiate all you want to, but come the fiscal cliff, this is going to happen.
And by the way, the reason the taxes are going up on January 1st is because the Republican Congress and George Bush built it that way.
And we need to hat tip Muggsy at Crooks and Liars because he pointed out today, we're recording this on Thursday, December 6th, 10 years ago today, Driftglass.
Yep.
George W. Bush fired his economic team and Dick Cheney said deficits don't matter.
I must correct you, Blue Gal.
Yeah.
Dick Cheney said Reagan
taught us that deficits don't matter.
So if you're a Republican and if you voted for these people, kindly shut the fuck up for the next 20 years.
About spending and how worried you are about spending.
While we clean your fucking
mess
up. We all
know that's a lie. Yep.
But the only way these tax cuts, these disastrous economy wrecking deficit exploding tax cuts ever got through Congress was because they had to be sunsetted because they were never going to be paid for. And every Republican voted for them. The tie breaking vote was cast by Richard Bruce Cheney. And that's how those tax cuts got into your pocket.
And David Brooks said we would be able to pay for them and have everything else we wanted from the government.
And have Social Security, Medicare, and still have a little bit of a surplus left over.
Yeah, so it'll be awesome.
And because, you know, and it's stimulative too, Blue Gal, you know?
Yeah.
David Brooks always believed in stimuli as long as it was tax cuts.
Yeah.
When it came to actually spending money to hire people and build shit, that's when he said, this doesn't work. He still maintains the stimulus didn't work. And you know why?
No, why?
Well, as he revealed at the public event where I was present, he lumped his catastrophic failure to predict the catastrophic failure of Iraq
with the stimulus. Yeah, that makes it both sides.
Well, yeah, you know, sure. This is invasion of Iraq was a noble, bold idea that was poorly administered. And I was in favor of it because I thought blah, 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 blah. But, you know, even, you know, both sides make big mistakes. Sure, Iraq was a mistake in the sense that it was badly done, but the stimulus also failed. So, you know, liberals made that mistake too. And of course, that isn't true. The people who have done the analysis of the stimulus said it did a wonderful job of doing what it was designed to do.
But and it David wasn't Brooks, big enough.
No, yeah. It wasn't big enough, but it raised the employment level by 1 point whatever million jobs. And if unemployment hadn't been as disastrously bad as if it was where everyone thought it was still falling by the time projections were being made. Nobody knew how deep the recession was going to be. So the interval, the amount it was supposed to increase economic activity and employment by is the amount that was increased. It worked in that sense. It was money well spent. It went directly to people's pockets. A third of it was tax cuts. Some of it was silly, but a lot of things are silly. But David Brooks cannot admit that because he needs liberals to be wrong about a big thing so that he won't look like a complete asshole having been wrong about Iraq and the stimulus. And that way he can say, you know, both sides, Blue Gal.
Both sides
get these
both sides
wrong.
Are equally wrong.
And that tape is available. I gotta say, I'm still a little bit surprised that tape, that video, which is available on YouTube, is a video of David Brooks in person lying to an audience full of people and getting caught at it and just denying he ever said what he said with my edits in there, saying, actually, here's what he really said and here's him lying and so on and so forth. And I am both surprised that hasn't really jumped and lots of people haven't said, holy crap, we actually caught this guy doing this. But then I realized that David Brooks is a member of the club.
Yep. And that's it, is that when you see Washington Life magazine showing all of these wealthy Washingtonians having parties together, mm-hmm. you know, going to book launch at parties. And there's John McCain and there's Hillary Clinton, both at the same party.
Hey, what do Hillary Clinton and John McCain have in common? Rupert Murdoch threw fundraisers for both of them.
Both of them. Yep.
Yep. So.
Yep.
That's our.
And we're not anti-Hillary. I want to be clear about that. I think people think we're anti her being the nominee. I'm not. I haven't made a pick for 2016.
No.
And I'm not going to.
I don't want to think about 2016.
I don't want to think about it.
No.
But I don't like the way it is important. You and I talk about this strip glass that the real sin of liberals is remembering stuff.
Yeah.
And I remember what her campaign was like in 2008. And yeah. I remember.
For you and me. Yes, I remember it well.
Hurry for you and me. Yeah. And just it was ham-handed. It was an inevitability train.
Right.
It was all about this demographic of what older women would like to have. Up with people, 3 a.m. ads, shame on you, Barack Obama. It was a horrible, horrible campaign run really badly.
Well, it was
she's
run.
Gonna have to do better.
And she, and you know what? I bet she will.
Yeah. And I'll bet she will too.
She's very, very bright and she's very capable and she learns from her mistakes.
She does learn from her mistakes.
And if she had been the nominee, I would have voted for her.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not like I was going to leave the country.
No.
But we forget what a really bitter, divisive campaign it was and how very much if you were opposed to Hillary, there must be something wrong with you because it's her turn.
Yeah.
You know, she's
well, and that was
this.
That was Mitt. What's his name's problem too with yep. Ann? What's yep. his name? Ann thought that it was Mitt. What's his name's turn too? And you just can't have that kind of inevitability thing. Also, your campaign song should not be by Celine Dion.
A Canadian.
Don't unless, go there. Don't have unless, a contest for your campaign song and then have the winner be Celine Dion.
No. And you can only have a Canadian doing your campaign song if it's William Shatner. And it's Rockin' Man.
Well, finally, I just find it really interesting that the only people inside the Beltway or anywhere who are talking about making serious changes to capital gains taxes is Warren Buffett. Surprise!
If I remember correctly, that is true.
Yeah.
But it's almost no one else. And it's it is the way rich people pay themselves.
Yep. Yep.
And therefore, that must not be taxed. And I don't know if you've noticed, but the sprightly young couple who opposed Clinton healthcare long ago apparently have aged rather rapidly and are now retired and making – they're not the same couple. I'm kidding. But it's the same dynamic. It's a nice old couple who are worried, very worried about Congress and the president because they have to get together and protect their dividends.
Yeah. Not Social Security and Medicare. Yeah,
no.
Dividends.
Protect our dividend. We worked hard. We're not moochers. We worked hard for those dividends, and they need to get together to protect them. Mm-hmm. Well, that isn't aimed at you or me. That's aimed – or even at the average senior citizen. That's aimed at – undecided voters who need to be convinced that the people who would really get hurt by that kind of tax are the frail and elderly.
Yeah.
When it's, you know, no, it's the Koch brothers.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's Sean Hannity.
And the Walton family. Yeah. Absolutely. And it fascinates me too, to think about what's going to happen with this debt ceiling situation.
Yeah.
And whether, you know, we're the only country in the world that has this shenanigans going on.
Yes.
With debt ceiling and giving a large number of hoo-has and yokels from the House an ability to, you know, damage the full faith and credit of the United States currency.
Yeah.
And we're the only country in the world that does that. And if this gets changed to the point where it's really understood that it has to be two-thirds. This is one of those situations where two-thirds of the Congress should have to stop the president from doing this. If it's an egregious thing where the president's gone nuts and is just raising the debt ceiling over and over again, then you stop him with two-thirds of the Congress.
Well, and the other issue being the president doesn't have the power to spend a dime.
No. Yeah.
You know, the Congress.
But the Congress has already spent this money when
exactly.
they raised the debt ceiling. That's the point.
Exactly.
And so if this seriously gets changed, it's going to be because the moneyed interests win.
Yeah.
And that's one of the situations where the people with the money and the power have to step in and say, look, you cannot damage our credit rating as a nation.
Yeah. Sorry,
and,
guys.
And, you know, too bad.
Get back in the sandbox. We're also not only the only nation in the world that has this ridiculous trigger. Mm-hmm. We're also the only nation in the world where our highest legislative body has, as far as I know, a procedure by which any 94-year-old crank can raise their finger
and stop everything
from happening by threatening, not actually, by threatening to stand up and talk for a long time.
Yeah.
And we are now officially the only country in history where the party leader of the minority party has filibustered his own bill.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Actually filibustered his own motion, his own bill. Which
because Harry Reid called his bluff and said,
sure.
Hey, we'll do this deal. We'll do this debt ceiling deal. No problem. And then, oh, no, I really wanted you to have 67 votes on that. Oh.
And that's where having a base who are completely reprogrammable and can be told that this never happened.
You'll never hear about this on Fox. Yeah. No. Yeah.
It's very handy because they just they are the Etch-a-Sketches. You just shake their little heads and they will forget this ever happened. And we'll move on to the latest.
They'll never be told it was happened. Yeah.
And why would they? But it's
on Sean Hannity and call that the news.
Yeah.
That's where we've gone. Yeah. That's where America has gone. Oh, my God. There are 54 trees at the White House.
Yes. Yes. I I caught this one out of the corner of my eye today. It was, oh my God, oh my God. Can you believe? Oh my God. And this is Investor Business Daily, and I forget who describes her as Wine Box and Althaus.
Mm-hmm. And, oh, everybody. Everybody calls her Box Wine and Althaus. Yeah.
But it's this, you know, it's the, golly, we've had a whole month without Michelle Bachmann inventing something to be angry about that is completely untrue. So let's invent something to be angry about.
But what about the war on Christmas, Driftglass?
Well, that's waning. I mean, it's...
I guess so.
It's being considered a joke. And that, you know, you got to have something new. So Michelle Bachmann would invent crap about Barack Obama commandeering the entire Navy to go with him to India and shit like that. And the Wingnuts would be mad about it for a month. And that's sort of like their nitroglycerin tablet for their hate hearts, you know?
Yeah.
That keeps their hatred strong. So, but they need something new and crazy to be mad about. And this month it's, can you believe Barack Obama has 54 Christmas trees in the goddamn White House? Why, that's ecologically irresponsible. And can you believe at a time of national debt, blue gal, that the president would blow that kind of money, 54 fucking trees.
All of which were donated by people who wanted the honor of having their little Christmas tree in the White House Museum, which is funded by the Parks Department.
Yeah, which is, and there's,
shut
there's
up, Blue
so
Gal.
Many, there's so many things that are wrong with that. There's so many things that are just factually untrue about that.
Yeah, and they were donated to the Parks Department by people who wanted the honor of having their school's Christmas tree in the White House. Yeah.
You know, I don't know everything, but you know what's in the White House basement? Ornaments from like the last 170
years. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They're not hurting for stuff to put the White – and that White House does have a budget because it is an actual museum. It is part of the Park District. There is a budget to decorate it every year. But most of the shit is donated, and it looks really good. So, by the way, if you would like to see something with more trees than that, go to the Museum of Science and Industry any Christmas over the last 40 years because that's what you do. There are 40 or 50 trees every year at Chicago's Museum of Science and Industry that are, I believe, either purchased or donated, and local ethnic and cultural groups decorate them to celebrate their own traditions.
Yeah, sure.
I don't understand. But this is like, all right, what do we have to be mad about this month? And they just – it's like they're rolling through whatever is coming off the White House fact sheet. Ah, here, Christmas trees. Let's get mad about that. Let's invent some bullshit reason to make a bunch of idiots angry at Christmas time at the Kenyan usurper because they might forget that, you know, they just got their asses kicked. And this is how this is like 2008, because it took 10 seconds after Barack Obama was inaugurated for the right to regroup itself and decide, we're just going to take this fucker now. I don't care anything. We're going to throw everything at him, and whatever sticks, that's what our ideology is going to be. And it's looking an awful lot like that's what they're going to try this year too, which is just pull shit out of thin air, lie your ass off, lie about the debt, lie about the deficit, lie about your positions, lie about the existence of Mitt Romney, and just keep throwing shit at the wall until something sticks. And that whatever sticks, that's what we believe in. And I'm hoping this time around, because Barack Obama has a secret weapon in his arsenal that we haven't talked about yet, his second inaugural address.
Yeah, which you're really excited about. I wonder if you've actually been asked to write it.
I have been asked to contribute a few jokes. I'm working on a Mitch McConnell, John Boehner, and a Wookiee walk into a bar. Sure where that's going, but that's where my muse is leading me these days. But the second inaugural address from a Democratic president, from the during a time of war and recession, the first black president of the United States is, you got to believe that there's an awful lot of writers who are sweating their balls off.
Oh, yeah.
Including Barack Obama, who writes a big chunk of his own speeches.
Sure.
To make sure this one measures up to Lincoln.
For sure.
I'm sure it will. But that plus the State of the Union address are going to be an awfully big pair of shotgun barrels staring down anybody who wants to stand up and act like an asshole for the next 2 months. Because you're going to have the second inaugural and the State of the Union sometime in the same area. And that's an awfully big weapons in the president's arsenal.
I want to know what Louis Gohmert's going to do.
Yeah. God. Oh, God. Oh, God.
He's still in the House, just so we're clear. Anyway, he ran unopposed.
I know.
For re-election. Thank God we still have Louis Gohmert.
Yeah. If we didn't have Louie Gohmert, we would have to invent him.
We'd have to invent him. Now that Jim DeMint is leaving the Congress, well, at least we still have Louie Gohmert.
Yeah, yeah. That's what Jefferson said on his deathbed.
I know. At least Adams is still alive or something to that effect.
Gohmert lives.
I also wanted to end, if you don't mind, with just a moment about Zapadan again.
Yes.
It just occurred to me that people get depressed around the holidays. Some people do. And,
I know I do.
Yeah. And if you do, and if part of it, I think, is this forced happiness that you're supposed to feel and you just might not feel it.
Yeah.
I always think of Ren and Stimpy. Do you remember when Ren had some sort of drug or some sort of contraption on his head that forced him to be happy? I'm so happy.
No.
Oh, it was awful. I mean, he was literally being forced to smile and be happy. I'm so happy. And
I veer more towards Brave New World and Soma. So that's where I go. Everybody take a drink, by the way.
Take a drink.
Yeah.
So that forced happiness is really can be hard to face if you're not feeling that way. And I just encourage everyone to be very kind to themselves. If you do something for me in addition to giving $5 to the podcast this week, and thank you to everyone who's done that this year. We so appreciate it.
We do very, very much.
But in addition to that, if you will please be kind to yourselves, that would be a great Christmas present for me if our listeners would do that. And I was thinking about that in relation to Zappadan, which is, you know, the internet festival in honor of Frank Zappa. We talked about it last week. I love how Zappadan starts with Bummer Knocked,
yes.
which is the day Frank Zappa died.
Yes.
And so you start at a low point and work your way up to day zero, which is Frank Zappa's birthday on the 21st. And
yay!
Yeah, yes. So it's okay to have some bummer knocks this season. We had one, and that's perfectly okay.
Yes, and it's in fact it's natural.
It is.
I've always believed, and I think there's some evidence to back this up, that we're basically big mammals, and we should be. I know there's ample proof of that, but somewhere our brain is telling us, dude, you should be sleeping 18 hours a day and eating lots of things that bulk you up and having sex and having babies and going to sleep. You know, you should be in a cave sleeping.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you should sleep right through the winter solstice and sometime in the spring. That's when you should get your ass up and go out hunting.
Although this is really frightening to me that this week we've had some 70 degree days in Illinois. I mean, this gets creepy when you start to realize. I mean, I'm terrified that the trees are going to start budding in our yard. And then what?
Then comes the hard frost. And
So climate change, people, it's happening.
Yeah, well, I don't think we need to tell anybody who listens to us.
No.
But it is. There are hurricanes and there are tidal waves and there are massive droughts throughout the Midwest that we endured this year. I'm sure we'll endure others. But when you stick your head outside and it's 72 or 3 degrees in central Illinois in December, you know, that there's a famous painting is a riderless horse. And the author was explaining that to her, at least, or whoever the person who was interpreting it. If you're east of the Mississippi, that's a charming bucolic scene.
Mm-hmm.
If you're west of the Mississippi, that means somebody's dead.
So
how what you bring to that ordinarily very calm looking scene is a lot about who you are, where you live. And again, a 70 degrees is lovely, except it's in the middle of fucking December. Yeah. And that is terribly ominous. Hot winters scare the shit out of me.
Yeah.
They really do.
Yeah.
Because that really says, no, we weren't kidding. These weren't flukes. These are data points on a chart that's going entirely in the wrong direction. That's still fixable, but there's a lot of people need to be cleared out of the way to make this thing fix. Hey, that's a good bummer knocked. Hey.
Merry Christmas, everyone. Happy holidays. Happy Hanukkah, which starts the 9th. And we love you guys. We just love you guys. Every week we feature at our website and Facebook page an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. And this week's internet kitty is Tessie. Tessie is at least part Siamese, and she's all lap cat for sure. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, and we are running low on internet kitty, so please do that.
Yes.
Send them to proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. And be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. Hey, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties are resigning to co-chair CPAC next year.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
This podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2012, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.